Welcome to church this morning. My name is Terry Bricky, and I've been a member here for about 3 years now. In our pulpit this morning, we have member Robin Berkeley. You are invited to stay following this worship service for fellowship, conversation, and refreshments in our fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room behind me. If you are a newcomer here this morning, we extend to you a special welcome and hope that if this is your first time to visit, you'll consider entering your name on one of the visitor cards that can be found in the back of your hymnal and placing the card in the offering plate or handing it to an usher. If you'll do that, we will send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about all the programs and activities going on here at the church. If you would like to learn more about the church and about Unitarian Universalism, please visit the information displays in our fellowship hall, where there are pamphlets, newsletters, and other visitor information that you're certainly welcome to take home with you. I now invite you to turn to your neighbors and greet them, especially the ones you don't know yet. I draw your attention to the announcements in your order of service. We hope you'll keep these things in mind as you plan your upcoming week. If there are additional announcements, you can please move to the microphone and share those.
Good morning, Catherine Chapman, Head of Food Ministries, and I'm the one coordinating the for Saturday lunch, which is next Saturday. I thank all those who've signed up already, but there are still some slots for some food items that we could still use, so if you have a chance to cook or even just donate some of the food that might be needed for those things, I can coordinate pickup and stuff throughout the week. So please take a look, and if you have questions, you can see me after service and ask questions. Thank you. Oh, and personal items. We are also collecting personal items like deodorant shampoos, shavers, shaving gel, stuff like that, so that we can hand those out to these people as well. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Eric Johnson, head of the worship committee. I have two announcements really briefly. One is I've made the commitment to buy, drum roll please, a heat press t-shirt machine. Ooh, yeah. And I'm going to be making t-shirts for our upcoming 175th birthday. Okay, so, but here's the catch. You can, if you want to, go to Cafe Press and get a first Unitarian Church of Alton t-shirt, about $15. Or you can bring your own t-shirt. I know everybody has blank t-shirts. You know, bring your own t-shirt and I will put our logo, our new in-house designed logo upon it for $4 or $5. I haven't figured it out. Money from that will go to help our RE program. Okay, so bring whatever kind of t-shirt, I don't know. I kind of like the diversity in that, you know, everybody's different t-shirts. And so that's going to start probably in 2 weeks or whenever the machine comes in for it. The next announcement is that this congregation is very proud to sponsor two of our members to a denomination, association-wide organization, the Unitarian Universalist Musicians Network. And Joy and Ken are being sent as our representatives to this organization. And so we are, as a congregation, going to be formally sponsoring them. So just wanted to thank
you. Good morning and welcome to this special place. I'm Stephen Mee, Director of Religious Education. This might be a familiar looking logo on a box to you. Trick or Treat for UNICEF has been around since the mid-50s. We will be participating with other Unitarian churches throughout the country, in fact. In collecting money for UNICEF, we'll be doing that on after second service on October 30th. But I have boxes if you would like to go through your neighborhoods and collect more. We can collect the money afterwards and be happy to send it in. Thank you. All of these are in a little basket in the food line, so that it's hard to mess with.
You
morning. I'm Mike Bechtel, and yesterday we picked up our first foster dog that we're fostering in our home through Hope Animal Rescue. And what we're doing is we're allowing the dog to stay in our home until she can be adopted. And so I'm just letting you folks know that if anyone's looking for a new dog, we do have one. And her name is, believe it or not, Ethel Merman. She is 3 or 4 years old, and she's a kind of a beagle type dog that's a little bit on beagle basset hound, a little bit on the plump side. She's a very, very nice dog. So if anybody's looking for a dog or knows someone who is looking for a dog, let me, Christopher, or Trish know sometime today.
Hello, my name's Paula Tarbell, and I'm one of the youth group advisors. We are having a fundraiser on November 13th, which is Sunday, and it'll be after service. The youth group is going to prepare lunch, and we ask as many of you can come as possible. I'm not sure what the menu is yet, but I hope you can come. Thanks.
I have a couple of announcements. Sarah couldn't be here today, but I'm supposed to be announcing the thrift store prom on October 29th. It's going to be a lot of fun. I can sell you tickets. I have them available. It's going to be a lot of fun. Another hat, 175th birthday. I know we've been getting these emails saying there's going to be announcements. Okay, first announcement, December 3rd, I think, is the first Saturday in December, whatever that date is. We're going to be having a big dinner here. It's going to be catered. I'll let you know what the prices are, but I want to save the date because I want everybody to come, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have activities for the kids in the Emerson place. We're also going to have the nursery open. So it's going to be a family affair, and I want everybody to be ready for that. We're going to do a fundraiser so that we can have this dinner, and that's going to be the ghost tours that comes through Alton. The man that runs the ghost tours has agreed to do one as a fundraiser for us. And November 11th is the Friday night that he will do that, and he can take up to 75 people. So there's going to be more announcements about that, but put that on your calendar because I think it'll be fun.
Brenda McCoy also asked me to announce that if you have not yet done your lime green interest and talent survey, they are in the Kate Worker Room. Please do one. And after you fill it out, you can put it underneath the stack so that she will collect them later.
Go ahead. Well, a friend of mine named Charlie Jacobson, who is a good friend of Berlin, Paul, and he's a good friend of mine too. Anyway, he kind of likes this church. He calls it the atheist church, you know. But anyway, it's a joke. But anyway, he's an atheist too. But he just recently got the news that he got prostate cancer. So he's concerned about that. The doctor kind of said, oh, he had blood in his urine because he had the biopsy of his prostate, and the doctor was about ready to walk out, and he said, well, by the way, you've got we had the 15 slides of your prostate, and one of them turned out with cancer. Well, he was in kind of a state of shock, and he started when he went home, he was driving kind of erratically, and he said everything kind of looked fresh and different. And then he got to the pharmacy, and the pharmacy for some type of medication, and the pharmacist they treated him just like family and were really nice to him and encouraged him, and he said he felt much better. So it's amazing how we can encourage someone's spirits, you know, when they're going through difficult times. So, thank you.
Ah! Hi, I'm Kevin McCarthy. Some of you may have heard that Diane spent a couple of days in the hospital at the end of this week, and the upshot of all of that is everything is probably fine, but we just wanted to say thank you so much for all the offers of help that we received, and all the good wishes and good thoughts that were sent our way. Thank you.
Also, Jennifer Timpey asked me to share, she is in RE right now, her 17-year-old cousin has, her cancer has returned, and her mother has also been diagnosed with cancer, so please keep them in your thoughts and prayers. The prelude will begin our worship service, played by Lily Tade, as River Johnson lights our chalice. Thus have you prepared the land, drenching its furrows, breaking up its clods, softening it with showers, blessing its yield. You have crowned the year with your bounty and with abundant harvest. The fallow meadows overflow. The valleys are blanketed with flocks. They shout and sing for joy. Our first hymn is number 300, With Heart and Mind. Please rise up as you are able. Join in responsive reading number 609, To Serve the People, by Saadi. To worship God is nothing other than to serve the people.
Does not need rosaries, prayer carpets, or robes.
All peoples are members of the same body, created from one essence.
If fate brings suffering to one member,
the others cannot stay at rest. Please be seated. We have been greatly blessed. Let us now give generously so that others might be blessed by the work of the church. A portion of this morning's offering will go to the Human Rights Campaign. If you wish to put your pledge, please mark the line. This morning's offering will now be given and received.
Good morning. Time for a children's moment. Come on down, kids, and then we'll go to class. After we go to class, the adults left in the sanctuary are going to be talking about service. So I thought I would tell a story about that this morning. And it's a very famous story called The Three Questions. And we actually have this book in the library over in the Kate Worker Room, and you can check it out anytime you want. It's a little different version from the one I'm going to tell this morning, but I think you'll like both. Well, there was a king, and he thought that his life would be better if he knew just three things. And these three things were, what is the best time to do each and everything? Two, who are the most important people to work with? And three, what is the most important thing to do at all times? So, this thought, having occurred to him, he had it proclaimed throughout his land that he would give a great reward to anybody who could teach him the answer to those three questions. Well, learned men came from all over the kingdom, and they gave him so many different answers about every single question that he asked that he was no smarter than when he started. Some said, well, the right time is, well, you do it in advance, and you do everything on a schedule. And others said, well, no, that wasn't really possible. So you just have to, like, not do anything that was, like, a waste of time, maybe watching television or just, like, you know, hanging out. But others again said, well, just being attentive to what was on, it was impossible for you to decide what the right time was. So, on to the second question. Equally various were the answers to that. Some people said that, well, counselors came forward. And how many remember what counselors have to say when we were doing Chalice Theater this summer? Do we always get good counsel from the king's counselors? It's iffy, isn't it? Yeah. So to the third question, what was the most important occupation? Some replied that it was science, and others said it was warfare, and others said it was religious worship. Well, the king said none of these answers satisfied him, so he said, I'm not going to give the reward to anybody. And instead, he decided to go visit a hermit that was in his kingdom who was famous for his wisdom. Well, the hermit never left his place, and he never would talk with royalty, so the king dressed simply and went in disguise. And he asked these same three questions of the hermit who was digging in his garden. What's the best time to do each and everything? Who are the most important people to work with? And what is the most important thing to do at all times? What do you think the hermit told him? Robbie. What a good thing. You would make a good hermit, Robbie. You would be very wise. But you know what this hermit said? Absolutely nothing. He kept digging in his garden. But he was an old man, and he was frail. And the king said, you know, you look like you've been working really hard. Let me dig for a while. So the king took the spade, and he dug in the old man's garden. He dug one bed and then another. And after he'd done two, he stopped. He says, what about my three questions? And the hermit didn't say anything. He just took the spade back and said, let me dig some more. The king said, no, I'll keep going. So he did. And the king dug those garden beds all afternoon. Well, after he dug two, then it was three, then it was four. And the king was getting tired. He said, I would like the answer to this question. But the hermit said, here comes someone running. Let's see who it is. Well, the king turned around and saw a bearded man come running out of the woods. And he was injured. He had a big cut across his stomach. And he was bleeding very badly. So the king and the hermit fixed him up. Took a while, but they stopped the bleeding. And they took the man inside and put him on the hermit's bed. Gave him some water. Well, meanwhile, the sun had set and it had become cool. And the king was so tired with his walk and his work that he'd done, he crouched down on the threshold, and guess what he did? Fell asleep. Well, he slept so soundly, he slept all night long at the hermit's house. And he awoke in the morning, and the man who they had helped was staring at him. Forgive me, sire, when he saw the king was awake and looking at him. I do not know you, said the king, and have nothing to forgive you for. Well, you do not know me, but I recognize you. And I am that enemy of yours who swore revenge on you because you banished my brother and seized his property. I knew you had gone alone to see the hermit, and I resolved to harm you on your way back. But the day passed, and you did not return. So I came out from my ambush to find you when I came upon your bodyguard. They wounded me, but I escaped. I would have died if you had not dressed my wound. And I wished to kill you, but now you saved my life. If I live and you wish it, I will serve you as your most faithful servant. Forgive me. Well, the king was pretty glad to have come to peace with an enemy so easily. So having taken leave of the wounded man, the king went out onto the porch and looked around for the hermit and didn't find him. But then he did. And he said, wished once more to beg answer to the questions he had put. But the hermit was outside on his knees. He was sowing those seeds in the garden beds that God dug. For the last time, I pray you to answer my questions, wise man. And the hermit said, you have already been answered. What do you mean? Asked the king. Do you not see, replied the hermit, if you had not pitied my weakness yesterday and dug those beds for me and gone your way, that man would have attacked you, and you would not have repented of having stayed with me. So, the most important time was when you were digging the garden beds, and I was the most important man, and to do me good was your most important business. And afterwards, when that man ran to us, the most important time was when you were attending to him, binding his wounds. So he was the most important man, and what you did for him was your most important business. So remember then, there is only one time that is important, right now. It is the most important time because it's the only thing we have power over. And the most necessary man is he whom you are with, for no man knows whether he will ever have dealings with anyone else. And as of the most important affair, it's to do good to the person you are with. So those are the answers that the hermit gave to the king of the three questions. The most important time is now, and the present is the only time over which we have power. The most important person is whoever you are with. And lastly, the most important thing is to do good to the person you are with. The Three Questions by Leo Tolstoy. So what do we do now? We're going to have fun and learn something. So why don't we go to class and do just that? Thank you, everyone.
place clears out once the kids leave. You notice that? Okay, good morning, everybody. The prayer that I chose for today honors autumn and the beautiful weather we've had lately. So, God of the seasons, there's a time for everything. There's a time for dying and a time for rising. We need courage to enter into the transformation process. God of autumn, the trees are saying goodbye to their green, letting go of what has been. We too have our moments of surrender with all their insecurity and risk. Help us to let go when we need to do so. God of fallen leaves lying in colored patterns on the ground, our lives have their own patterns. As we see the patterns of our own growth, may we learn from them. God of misty days and harvest moon nights, there is always the dimension of mystery and wonder in our lives. We always need to recognize your power-filled presence. May we gain strength from this. God of harvest wagons and fields of ripened grain, many gifts of growth lie within the season of our surrender. We must wait for harvest in faith and hope. Grant us patience when we do not see the blessings. God of geese going south for another season, your wisdom enables us to know what needs to be left behind and what needs to be carried into the future. We yearn for insight and vision. God of flowers touched with frost and windows wearing white designs, may your love keep our hearts from growing cold in the empty seasons. God of love, you believe in us, you enrich us, you entrust us with the freedom to choose life. For all this, we are grateful. Amen. Our next hymn is Blessed Spirit of My Life, number 86 in the Gray Hymnal. The first reading for today is by Dorothy Day, and it's called Commitment. People say, what is the sense of our small effort? They cannot see that we must lay one brick at a time, take one step at a time. A pebble cast into a pond causes ripples that spread in all directions. Each one of our thoughts, words, and deeds is like that. No one has a right to sit down and feel hopeless. There's too much work to be done. Our second reading is from Henry David Thoreau called To Live Deliberately. Why should we live in such a hurry and waste of life? We are determined to be starved before we are hungry. I wish to learn what life has to teach and not, when I come to die, discover that I have not lived. I do not wish to live what is not life. Living is so dear. Nor do I wish to practice resignation unless it is quite necessary. I wish to live deep and suck out all the marrow of life. I want to cut a broad swath to drive life into a corner and reduce it to its lowest terms. If it proves to be mean, then to get the whole and genuine meanness of it and publish its meanness to the world, or if it's sublime, to know it by experience and to be able to give a true account of it. I am honored and privileged to serve as your leader today at the pulpit. I feel like I have really big shoes to fill, and I'm very excited to be asked by the worship committee to be a part of this experience. So thank you to everybody. My sermon today is about the joys and struggles of service. From my earliest moments as a child, service has been an important part of my upbringing and education. I was raised in the social justice tradition of the Catholic Church, and serving those less fortunate was an important part of my mother's and, to some extent, my father's daily activities. Whether it was volunteering for Birthright or the local homeless shelter, or leading scouting troops or supporting the local police athletic league, we were always taught that no matter how hard it might be for us, there was always those who had it worse off and who needed our help. So this mantra followed me when I went to college at a Jesuit institution, Marquette University in Milwaukee, which fully embraces the idea of service and community. And Marquette's been lauded at the national level for the level of activism and service that their students engage in. While I may have concerns about many aspects of Catholicism, this one single aspect has stayed with me to this day and has truly influenced my core values in a way few other things have done. And as I know I've shared with you here before, one thing of many that has drawn me to the UU Church has been the mission of social justice and social activism and volunteerism that is central to our faith. Our activities in the areas of food outreach and LGBTQ activism and support are issues near and dear to my heart. And for me, finding a church that would give me an outlet to focus my service and help teach my children of the importance of service was, if you'll pardon the word, a godsend. It's not as if I ever found it difficult to find something in which to get involved, but I loved the idea of a place where I could go for spiritual respite that also shared my values of social justice and service. So my history of service has really ebbed and flowed over the years, but giving back has always been an important part of me. In high school, I was voted as someone who had done the most for my class. Later, I was one of three students in my college who received an award for balancing both academic excellence and service through volunteerism in the community and on campus. There were some years where I wasn't involved in any activities at all, you know, particularly once I hit the working world in my 20s, my priorities shifted there for a little while. And then I hit grad school and the volunteerism started again. I got an award for service while getting my MBA and more committee work while I was getting my PhD, blah, blah, blah. You know, and even now, as I submitted my tenure portfolio a few weeks ago, I was told that the service aspect of my packet was way beyond the expectation of a junior faculty member. And to be honest, I get exhausted just thinking about it. It's been a long couple of years. Can't wait. But this sermon is really not meant to be a treatise in the way that I've served the community as a bragging point, because really, on the contrary, what I want to use is my experiences as a springboard to share some things that I've learned of late. So bear with me, we're taking you on a little journey, and we're going to talk about the importance of balancing both service and self-care. Going back to my opening comments, I told you that my mother and at times my father were involved in service in our community, and at one point in time, they were actively involved in an organization called Marriage Encounter, first as participants and later as session leaders and teachers. Marriage Encounter, for those of you who don't know, is a movement within the Catholic Church that focuses on marriage enhancement to improve communication and revitalize what they call Christian marriage. It developed in Spain in 1952 and in 1971, spread like wildfire to the United States, and is still in existence today worldwide, multiple countries, multiple languages. It's still a force to be reckoned with in the church. Marriage Encounter involved many weekends away from my parents and evenings doing writing and preparation for those weekend sessions. And while this may not sound completely unreasonable in our hustle and bustle day and age, for kids who were until recently used to a stay-at-home mom, this was a difficult change for us. So much so that at times when my father was upstairs researching and writing his lesson plans, we could barely tiptoe around him without him exploding that it was too noisy and he couldn't concentrate. And after a few incidents like this, it was family meeting time. My siblings and I felt like we couldn't interact with our parents the way we were used to, and that there was more tension at home than there was joy in the service that they were given. So after that meeting, my parents left the service of Marriage Encounter, but it was an important lesson to all of us about how service can, at times, take over our lives in an unhealthy way. But it's kind of funny, though, how life repeats itself, and sometimes it takes a sledgehammer to realize that you're doing the exact same thing that you had issues with in the past when you were on the receiving end. So, learned that, had my little sledgehammer. So fast forward my life. Moving here a few years ago on the cusp of a significant relationship ending due to my former partner's stroke. Her decision to end the relationship absolutely devastated me to the point of numbness, and one way I could feel alive was to get involved, keeping myself busy so I didn't have to remember how awful it felt. And one thing led to another, volunteering for HRC, which I'll talk a bit more about in a few moments, and for an organization called Bikers Against Child Abuse, along with being a single mom of two, having a full-time job that, of course, kept me busy as well. And once you get on the express train, sometimes it's hard to step off, particularly when things get crazy busy. The high of giving to others can be addictive. It feels good to see that your actions help others. It's amazing when you see the gratitude on their faces and that you know you made a difference in someone's life. And again, as you use, we're called to service, right? We're called to fight injustice in the world, so of course, when someone asks, I'll be there, I'll do it. And then the train wreck happens. So before I move forward, let me take a few moments to talk about HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, as today has been designated HRC Sunday by our worship committee. HRC is the largest organization in the United States fighting for LGBT civil rights. Is it the only game in town? No. But it's certainly one of the most influential in Washington, D.C., where they engage in political action and lobbying on behalf of the LGBT community. Along with lobbying, they also run a foundation that advocates for safe schools at the K-5 level, hospital rights for same-sex couples, ranks businesses on their LGBT friendliness through our buyer's guide, and yes, there is an iPhone app for that. It strives to promote diversity in the community. They're not perfect, but then again, who or what organization is? We work hard in local communities running awareness and fundraising campaigns. A month ago, as I know I announced here, we had our gala dinner, we broke all local fundraising records, and today we have our annual bowling event at Tropicana Lane, so if anybody's still interested and you want to come talk to me. We're seen every year at Pride, and this year we broke our membership and fundraising goals and also had a big presence in our parade. Each year we honor an individual and an organization that are known for fighting for LGBT civil rights, and this year we honored Bert Coleman. And we also honored Cheryl Wayland and her organization, SAGE, that advocates for elder LGBT issues. We know that certainly growing older in the society has its challenges. Being LGBT has its challenges. But when you see the intersection of the two, you realize that the work that Cheryl and SAGE is doing is really phenomenal. And I certainly encourage you to get involved in the organization. As Cheryl's words at our local dinner when we were honoring her were really compelling about what we need to do to help our community. I also want to take a moment to ask you all to keep Bert Coleman in your prayers. About 2 weeks ago, he had a massive stroke. He's currently in the hospital and unfortunately is not expected to make it. With your collective energy, we can wish him some peace and his partner some strength, because they're navigating an all too familiar to me scenario, having been there, done that a few years ago. HRC has fought to end Don't Ask, Don't Tell, has fought hard for workplace equality and marriage rights, and as well as working hard to elect fair-minded politicians at the state and local and the federal level. Our organization is filled not only with activist LGBT individuals, but also with an enormous amount of straight allies who believe that your love, who you love, should not dictate your right to a job or your right to be married, and that all persons, regardless of their orientation, or gender identity, deserve to live a full, happy, and open life. Memberships are pretty reasonable. I have set up a table outside in the Kate Worker Room. If you have any questions about HRC, feel free to ask. I can talk to you about membership issues and things like that. Okay. So with that behind me, let me return to my story I spoke about the inevitable train wreck that occurs when we mindlessly get caught up in doing things and forget to stop and look around. And that's pretty much what happened to me in the last year. I've been running and running and running, and my stress level was going up, and the kids were struggling with a few things, and I felt like I was barely breathing some days between kids' activities, my job and its unique demands, my community service activities, and the struggles the kids were having, and et cetera, et cetera. And then my wonderful best friend and girlfriend strategically asked me a question that changed the way I saw my activities. What are you trying to numb yourself from with all of your activities? What are you hiding from? And I came to a sudden stop, so much so that I think I probably gave myself whiplash. It was a fabulous question and one that I had never asked myself, and it was asked with such love and caring and honesty that I knew it was something that I had to address. Why was I engaged in all these activities? If the activities were feeling like a chore and were not joyful, why would I engage in something that was clearly causing me and my kids more harm than good? And what was I numbing myself from? What was I compensating for with all the giving? I was drained from making sure others were taken care of and had neglected to first take care of myself and second, take care of those around me who I loved and cared for more than anything. I had mindlessly done the exact same thing my parents had done 30-odd years before, neglecting myself and my loved ones all in the name of service. I was addicted to the high of giving while forgetting to give to myself. Because, you know, we're told all our lives that taking care of ourselves is, you know, it's selfish. Well, it's not, because in that age-old adage, if mama ain't happy, ain't no one happy, loosely translates to mean, if you're not whole and happy and taking care of yourself, those around you are not happy, nor healthy, nor getting what they want and need from you. Even when you're busting your butt giving to others, they aren't getting your best either, because you're run down and you're working on an autopilot. Don't we deserve the best? Don't our loved ones deserve the best? Don't the people we aim to serve deserve our best? So I did my work. I explored my reasons for the flurry of activity with which I was engaged. I got some good answers and some insight into myself and decided it was time to simplify. And I take a really deep breath there, because simplifying is not easy by any stretch of the imagination. But I realized that I didn't have to be the head of the committee. I could be a member and help out occasionally, and that's okay. I didn't have to be moving every day of the week. I could say no and still feel good that I was doing what I could to help make the world a better place. So I'm sure there are some of you that may be out there going, see, now I know why I don't volunteer for anything. It's too hard, it's too draining, it's too, you know, insert excuse. Well, sorry to tell you, that's not my message, and it's not the takeaway today. What I encourage you to do is not only to say no when appropriate, but it's also imperative that we learn how to say yes. Serving others demonstrates empathy. It's an essential part of our human experience and a central part of a collective society. It's also a central value of our faith. I recall the words of Edward Everett Hale, "I am only one, but I am still one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do." Find something, anything that you can do. If you can't come to break bread on fourth Saturday meal, donate food. We just heard Catherine tell us that. If you can't march in the Pride Parade in June, make a donation to HRC or some other worthy LGBT charity to support the people who are willing and able to be more active in the movement for equality. Do something, as Dorothy Day said in our first reading. Be mindful, but be mindful and live deliberately, and ensure you care for yourself in the process, as implied by Thoreau when he said in his reading, "Nor do I wish to practice resignation unless it is quite necessary." We can't do everything, but we can do something. It's okay to say no when service drains us or makes us run in circles trying to get it all done. It's okay to say no and be more mindful when you realize that the flurry of activity may be a smokescreen for another deeper issue that we're running from. We need to show ourselves the same gentle care and consideration and service that we want and need to show others. And it's okay to take care of ourselves first, because we do no one any service if we are draining ourselves in an unhealthy way. I was fortunate enough and grateful that I had someone who loved me and knew me like a book, who could strategically ask me the question that changed the way I view things. But we can't always depend on an external source for inspiration. How can we all ensure that we've engaged in self-care so that we have something to give others? And how can we check in with ourselves regularly to examine our motives for our actions and ensure we are engaged for the right reasons and not just moving forward mindlessly and blindly, blissfully numb from reality? Pema Chodron, a Buddhist nun, argues that we must deal with our issues as they are presented to us, because if we continue to run from them, whether consciously or unconsciously, they follow us and haunt us, really, until we deal with those issues for years, a lifetime if necessary. So 5 years after my partner had her stroke and ended our relationship, I finally had to look at the devastating impact that that had on my life and the subsequent actions I took as I tried to pull myself and my life together. Mindfulness is a practice, as we say in Buddhism. We have to practice and practice and practice until we get it right. And it may take a lifetime, but the journey and the benefits outweigh the challenges. So we need to examine why we aren't serving, and we need to examine why we are serving, all while being gentle to ourselves and to those around us. And I hope your journey is as rewarding as mine. All right, our next hymn is Be That Guide, number 124 in the hymnal. Stand if you are able, please. Benediction today is by Thandika, a UU minister from Rockford, Illinois, and faculty member at Meadville Lombard Theological School, whom I just found out today was one of Eric Johnson's teachers. Despair is my private pain, born from what I have failed to say, failed to do, failed to overcome. Be still, my inner self, let me rise to you. Let me reach down into your pain and soothe you. I turn to you to renew my life. I turn to the world, the streets of the city, the work tapestries of brokerage firms, drug dealers, private estates, personal things in the bag lady's cart, rage and pain in the faces that turn from me, afraid of their own inner worlds. This common world I love anew, as the lifeblood of generations who refuse to surrender their humanity in an inhumane world courses through my veins. From within this world, my despair is transformed to hope, and I begin anew the legacy of caring. Have a beautiful fall weekend. Have a great day. Thank you.